listeners, Jeff Zimfer. Welcome to this episode of the Mortgage Marketing Radio Podcast. This is where we help you, the mortgage loan originator, move from solicitor and vendor to partner and peer when it comes to you attracting and engaging real estate agents to have meaningful conversations that lead to long-term profitable partnerships, referrals for you. And we're going to talk more about sources of business on today's episode. So if you've ever been curious, what are the primary sources of a top producer and how does that break down and what are the activities that top producers do to get those pillars of business active? Well, you're going to hear that in a moment from our special guest who's doing over $100 million a year in production. Before we get there, I've got to share with you a success story from our platform over at My Agent Classes. This is where we every single month are equipping mortgage originators around the country with plug and play educational classes, materials, resources to help them attract instead of chase realtors, help them have meaningful conversations and build a personal brand that differentiates them from all the noise in their local marketplace. One of the stories I have to tell you is one of the things we do on our weekly Friday coaching calls is, and as a matter of fact, the previous episode might've been the one you heard where I had a special guest, Tom Moffitt from Canada, talking about Instagram broadcast channels. So once a month, I bring in a special guest. If you haven't checked that episode out, go check it out. However, I'm just reading our Facebook group here, and we have people who post wins of the week. You hear me share those every single week on this podcast. And there are new ones to share almost every single week in here. One of the coaching areas we have around, if you're going to be hosting agent classes virtually or in person, is the question would be, do you call to confirm your reservations versus just text or just email? And so I put this out there to my group and a couple comments were right here. I went from 13 to 19. I had 10 realtors tell me if they set up, if this loan officer, Marlene, what's up? Shout out to you. If Marlene would set up a separate Zoom class, they would attend it. Of the 19 face-to-face people who attended Marlene's class, 5 of them are realtors she's never met before. And she's got 10 realtors saying, hey, if you do a Zoom version of this class, we would attend that. My best members, what they do is they host one class a month in person, and then they repeat that same class virtually 2 or 3 weeks later or within the same month. Reason why, you reach a wider audience. You get really good at teaching the content. You continue to perfect your process. And that's the name of the game, guys. If you want to get in shape, if you want to get fit, right? You don't go to the gym once. What do? You repeat the process over and over again. You build momentum. Like a plane getting off the runway, you've got to burn some fuel, create some momentum, forward momentum to get that lift that's going to get you airborne. Once you're airborne, well, then we can do some additional advanced strategies. But for a lot of folks we're working with right now, it's how do you get lift? How do you get engagement and attention? Especially now, considering the NAR lawsuit, the noise around that. If ever there was a time to be more aligned with real estate agents and help them become more valuable to their clients, listing and buy side, now's the time. That's exactly what we do at My Agent Classes. We equip you, the loan officer, with a turnkey library of classes that are sales and marketing related, social media related, how to deliver a better buyer presentation, how to get your offer accepted. Think about all the challenges, the things you're trying to learn in your business. Agents are trying to learn the same thing. What I'm suggesting is you become a conduit for that information, for those resources, and you change the narrative. You shift the brand identity. You go from solicitor and vendor to partner and peer, and you get referrals. So if you're open-minded, you're coachable, and you're willing to get out there and add value, this might be for you. The only way to find out is to book a call with me. Let's have a conversation. You go to www.mortgagemarketing.pro, mortgagemarketing.pro, book a call with me. We'll see if we're a fit for you. Okay, this week, my special guest, long time coming, huge fan of this gentleman, very successful mortgage professional out of the Dallas, Texas market area. Brian McCauley is somebody who I've been following for some time, and he has really evolved and grown his presence, his personal brand online. And it shows if you simply go to follow him. We'll put links in the show notes. Instagram is one of his primary channels. His handle is Dallas Mortgage Man, pretty much wherever you go. YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, all that fun stuff. That's where you can go follow Brian. Once again, I said there'll be links in the show notes. But Brian, I think this year he said he's tracking 125 to 130 million. I think 90% of his business is purchased, 60% from agents and CPAs, 20% past clients, 10% social media. this is a journey of a, if you ever was curious of like, what's the journey for a loan officer who started, and how did they mature and evolve? What additional activities and strategies and mindsets did they take on to continue to evolve and grow? Well, this is what I think, hopefully I extract from Brian during this conversation. And we talk about attract versus chase. We talk about some of the changes that Brian had to adapt and go through, and his commentary on what the market coming forward looking for the next couple, 3 years with, you know, this NAR thing with inflation and so forth. I think you'll find this to be a very insightful conversation and might reset some of your thoughts and mindset and strategies about your activities moving into this year and beyond to grow your business. So without further ado, let's get into this week's show. Brian, welcome to the show.
Appreciate you having me, man. Long time coming.
I should say, finally, welcome to the show.
Yeah, right? About time.
I think we've been at this for a year, but we're both very, very busy. And I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. Before we get into that, for those who may not know Brian McCauley, why don't you help us out? Who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Brian McCauley from Dallas, Texas, producing branch manager at Cross Country. Been in the mortgage industry, just started my 20th year, literally first job directly out of college. It's all I know, for better or for worse. So happy to talk about that and whatever else we want in that crazy market.
Wow. First job out of college. All right. That leads me directly to people are often curious. How did you get into this thing? Because you didn't wake up or, I assume, go to college. So let's start with that kind of easy entry point. What was that transition into the industry?
It's a great question, man. So I finished college December 2004. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was a finance major and I fell backwards into basically an offer to become an LO. So I was a month or two out of college. Moved home with my folks. They did what everybody else does, says, hey, you're not going to sleep in and party, go get a job, figure it out, something. So they nudged me into this recruiting firm, just so it happened to have an opening for, like, I think it was outside mortgage sales, inside mortgage sales, something at that time. I said, sure, I'll take it. It's $500 a week. I've got beer money on Fridays. My parents are off my back. It was just a temporary thing that I fell into. So young, didn't know anything about it. But it interests me enough to pay attention to it. And of course, I don't want my folks on my back. And so 1 month led to six led to 12. I started to kind of like the numbers and the finance and relationship and problem solving stuff. And then off to the races we were for a while. Like everybody else, ran face first into a wall and had to figure out, you know, how do I pick myself up and dust myself off permanently? So that's 20 years all stuffed into one, but that's how it started. And right now is where it's at.
Was that first wall 2008, roughly, timeline?
Yeah. It was a tough wall, man. You don't know when you're young back then. You don't know how markets are and what to expect. And it's just what happens, happens. You have no idea. And so been a lot learned along the way, but I'm thankful for it all, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I went through that as well because I entered in the industry in 2003, which is, it's interesting. You said the first wall, and there's a lot of brewing in my head right now in terms of, before we get into this, if I can, let me take care of some of the housekeeping or logistics. I didn't have time to look this up ahead of time, but if you don't mind, for the context of those listening, can you give us a sense of either annual production or units, however you want to break that down?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously continuing to grow, which I'm thankful for, but, you know, in the last 3 to 4 years, I've averaged anywhere from probably 100 million to 160. Just our team, and obviously it fluctuates with rates and refi and the boom stuff here and there, but we're always in the 100 million plus. This year we should be projected to do probably about 125 or 130. So we've got a, you know, team of 7, 8, 9, 10 people total, from, you know, partners and processors and marketing people, and an awesome team. But we are excited about the future. We've had a great past, and we're just continuing to kind of take the mindset of, you know, strong survive. We like it when more markets change because we're able to show our value even more. So we hope to continue to put up those numbers and serve as many people as we can.
I'm curious then, let's roll back a little bit to earlier on in your career, you know, your first, because you were nudged and had to make money and all that stuff, and the parents are on your back. Was there a time that you can recall that there was a shift that happened for you mentally when perhaps the lights went on, or maybe the ramp, the runway was like, you know how they light up a runway and all the lights open up the future, the direction of that? Like, did something like that switch for you where you're like, wait a minute, holy shit, like I can make a hell of a lot of money in this business?
I don't think in the very beginning it was the money driven piece. I think what moved me to move forward the fastest was the pain of the crash and like realizing that subprime wasn't real. And so the little amount of money I was making at that time was still a whole lot of money to me at the person at that age, and wasn't easy to get that back. And so it was, everybody settled in and sunk down. And I think it was the pain that drove me more than the gain, because I had to, but also I had to make a decision. I've been working for 3 or 4 years and it's like, hey, am I going to get out of this industry and start over? And so I also picked up 2 part-time jobs during the major part of the crash. I had no loans. I was at a title company approving janitorials. And then I was working with a friend of mine on nights and weekends doing trash outs, like cleaning out foreclosures. And I just did it for 3 months to pay the bills. And eventually I was like, I can't do this. I have to commit myself to the mortgage business and learn all this stuff and go, or it's going to beat me. And so that 3 jobs at one time started to tip the scale. And I figured if I could learn everything and outwork the market, I could get there. And so I started there and started working open houses up and down my street for 4 years straight. And eventually it picks up. The journey's long and it's tough, but that was probably the moment that I look back and say, when I had 3 jobs, cleaning out foreclosed homes, a lot of yuck. And it's like, I didn't want to stay there and I had to make a decision to get out of that mode.
Interesting. Right. As the old saying goes, people are more motivated to avoid pain than they are to gain pleasure. That's a perfect example. So you said something very important there. Well, 2 things. One is you talked about pivoting, but perhaps what came to that pivoting was you said you needed to make a decision, which was to commit or not to this business. And I think that's a huge takeaway for everybody listening, especially in the current times that we're in right now.
Yeah.
Because there's the outgo of the originators, we've always seen it, right? The rates go down, people come in, the rates go up, people come back, all that fun stuff. But I think you tell me, are those cycles becoming less forgiving of the people coming in and out? Like there's less of those people, there's less opportunity. Do you think you can come in and ride the low refi wave anymore? Like you used to be able to?
No, I mean, it's not maybe as a job for a year, if you're trying to pick up some extra income or something here and there. I mean, every industry, regardless of what it is going to catch a little wave, stock market, real estate, mortgages or whatever. But most people, they're trying to make a career out of it. It's not going to be a second job or a side job. Every now and then, could somebody catch a little refi boom? Of course, but hoping nobody's trying to build their career off a 9-month rate boom. Just like somebody can, their cousin become a builder or something here and there. And so there's always these exceptions to the standard. But the standard is, hey, most of the time, it's a tough business. That's the truth. There's a lot of regulation. It's very invasive. It's very fast. People are emotional. There's a lot of pieces moving all the time. And it's not easy to get into. The regulation is kind of like the opposite of auto. You get an auto, you can pull up on a car lot in one day, walk around for an hour, pick the car out, talk to the finance manager, get through it. And by 4 o'clock, you're done. To buy a house and get a mortgage approval is a lot of stuff. And so it's not for the faint of heart. It's not easy to pick it up quick. When somebody jumps in when the market is good, yes, they could probably make a little extra and do well for a year or two, but it's not sustainable because you really have to know everything. And when the rates drop and you don't have all the fish jumping in the boat, you're left to see what your skill sets actually are. And that's where most people come up short and have decided to step out of the industry.
Okay. In a more normal balanced market, what would you say your balance of percentage refi versus purchase is?
90% purchase.
Okay. And what is typically, historically, I know this is a moving number for you, but what is approximately your primary sources of business?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'm all self-generated. Everything I do is I don't do internet leads or anything like that. So it's probably 60% realtor, CPA, business financial, probably 20 to 25% past client, probably 10%. 10-15% social and marketing. And then you got a little 5 of a slush, right? I'll get something from a financial planner. I'll get something from a divorce attorney, kind of that mix. But that's really my model. I want to stick to that model right now. It's really quality. I want to go way beyond the loan. I'm at a place in my life to where I just don't want to get the loan done smooth and on time and make everybody happy. I'm trying to bring financial success to the buyer. I'm trying to open more doors, create more opportunities and more money for the realtors and their book of business. All the professional coaching that I've got, I want to pay it forward and give it to other people because I want to be valuable beyond the loan. And I think that comes with time and experience, but it also comes with selecting the right business partner. They have to be on the same page as you. Do they want to grow? Do they understand that cheaper is not better? What's their vision? How's their team look and model? And so I'm trying to link up with those people. And as I find them, I sink deeper and get better relationships with them. So that way we can continue to grow and help each other for years.
Yeah. And that's a good kind of, transition point into how do you get in front of these partners? Because I deal with a lot of people every single week, the struggle of getting in front of realtors, the cold calling, the door knocking open. And you did 4 years of open houses, which is, you've earned your stripes, man, but like, if you were, let me just ask it this way. What are the primary methods by which you either attract or engage? Let's take realtors to start with.
So it's a good question. I think it depends upon where people are at in their careers. So you've got, beginner, middle of the road, and kind of a seasoned expert. And so depending upon who the person is and where they're at, you have to approach a realtor different. If you're young and maybe you don't know all the guidelines, you can win them over on hustle. Hey, I'm young, I'm single, I can work till midnight. Like, that might be your pitch. They might be looking for somebody that's a workaholic. Somebody in the middle might be a hybrid of like workaholic / knowledgeable. Somebody, on the seasoning could be all three plus open doors. So it depends upon who you are, but what you want to attract. There's a million ways to go out there and attract business partners. You just got to know your target audience. And I tell people, if they don't know who their business partner is, like the ideal profile, and they don't know who their clients are, they don't know who they aren't, who they aren't. And so you can't just pitch to everybody, just like you can't date everybody. So I think depending upon where you're at in your career, figure out, hey, this is where I'm at. These are my strengths. This is who I'd like to mirror as a business partner. Find them, target them. But a secret to finding these partners is just asking them, hey, what are two or three things that would blow your mind or wow you from a lender? Like, what would make you say this person's the most incredible person ever? Terms aside, character, specifics, details. Most people will tell you, communicate well, be nice to my clients, speed, trust, communication, close, smooth, and on time. And if you say, if I do all these three, can I have a shot? Okay, great. But it all depends on who you're talking to, where your skill set's at, and what you want to do. But there's a million lenders out there, and there's a million agents out there. And so, people get bored of getting cold called and the same stuff all the time. And so you got to add a little value. Sometimes you got to get a little uncomfortable making some calls. But you can call listing agents from contracts. You can call title companies and ask them, hey, who do you know? Realtors you've worked with in the past, friends, family. I mean, there's plenty of ways to get there. But you also want to make sure that if you're fully committed, you're not reaching out to somebody that's partially committed, because you may be doing everything right. And they may say, yeah, sure, I'll send you some loans or whatever, but they don't have any business. And so the reciprocity piece and identification is important. Hmm.
What would you say is the biggest obstacle or hurdle that originators looking to add realtors to their bus face, whether it be internally themselves, self-imposed, or externally?
I think the challenge with that is it depends on where the loan offers at and their career. Building a team at scale that still creates a great experience and high quality is what most lenders struggle with if they start to stretch with agents, because they are usually the quarterback, the receiver, the running back, and the offensive tackle all in one. And why that's good to a certain extent, your ceiling is low. So in order to grow and scale and say, hey, I can't do everything all the time, right? I can't be the owner, the manager, the cook, and the security guard. I have to get more people. The problem with our industry, as we know, whether it's the realtor side or the lender side, the leadership is poor. They don't ever show you how to build and get a team and treat people and teach these skills and processes and all that. And so loan officers just kind of do it off the cuff. And what happens is their struggle is, they just work 75 hours a week and they do 5 or 10 loans a month and they're, making okay money, but their quality of life sucks and they can't go anywhere. And that's because they have the fear of losing or letting somebody down. But really that comes because they can't build and scale via a team. And so they're stuck in this like maximum one person role. And then as they try to hire and go, they either mishire or don't do it right. And they don't know how to get led and all these things. And so they breach the trust with themselves and with the agents. You can let them down. And so they hold on to it super tight. And then agents are similar in nature. They're workaholics as well. They do everything. And so the ability to build trust and scale takes time. But I think that's one of the hardest things for people to do, whether they're a lender or an agent, is build a team, build the trust, and do it over a long period of time. And then actually be a real model versus like back to one person army.
Do you recall when you took it upon yourself to hire your own assistant in whatever role that was, not like the, you know, processor, the people that the company give you, but out of your own pocket stuff. Do you recall that?
Yeah. So the first person that I actually brought onto the team that came out of my pocket was a processor. You know, you get to a point as a loan officer where you realize, regardless of your skill set, being a loan officer or an agent to go big and have a good quality of life and make money and give a good experience, it is a team game, no matter what. So you get to a place to where I'm originating, corporate processing is okay, but we can feel the damage of, hey, you know, this person doesn't care enough. They don't see my vision. They're not calling this person back, and it damages your reputation that you work hard to get. So the first person that I ever paid for out of my own pocket was a processor. I think a loan processor for a loan officer is their best friend, and they're super important, and they're a deep anchor to making that transaction happen. Because you've got to have a front-end anchor and a back-end anchor. The loan officer is usually the front-end anchor. The processor is the back-end anchor. And if you can build around those anchors over a long period of time and make those people leaders and manage and treat people well, that's how you really draw it all in. But the processor was the first thing. And of course, that person helps you finish out the loans on the back end, which frees a person on the front end. So then they can prospect more, because the number one thing anybody can do, no matter what they're doing in our industry, is generate biz and leads. And then you got to get an assistant for you. So, hey, who's the person that can help me schedule some calls, you know, import some credit, do some things that are important to the loan, but they're not maybe client facing or conversion pieces. And then you just kind of 1-2, 1-2, 1-2 over a period of time. And so I'm still trying to get it right. I think it's a forever game, but slowly but surely, with trial and error, a lot of professional coaching, a lot of good conversations, we got some awesome teammates, and we're doing good. We're doing good.
Yeah. I heard it once said that, you know, being a business owner, which is how I view originators, is they're your own self-employed person. Now you've got some additional resources that perhaps your standard, right, solo entrepreneur does not. But the point being is, that being a solopreneur, business owner, whatever, is the greatest self-development program out there, because, and I know you've done a lot of training and courses and stuff, because it just, it's about, not to sound cliche, but it's more about who you become, right? And it's like, to get to that next level, you've got to become like that different person. Have you experienced that?
And you just, I mean, it's all part of it. I think the older you get and the more you go through these valleys and peaks, and, you know, you lose some people and you gain some here and there, like, it's all part of it. So I think as you get older, you realize, like, nobody's had a clean path. Everybody's gotten bruises and black eyes and stuff. And it's just like, the faster you can fail and learn and find people that are better than you, above you, and just, like, you know, submit and surrender to the process, it's okay. But these are things, you know, the quicker you can learn that early, the easier it'll be on you. Cause it's not, I mean, no one works 20 hours and makes a million bucks. I mean, they got to figure out where the balance and the give is. And finding that early and putting a plan around it is important.
I always try, I play this little trick. It's either I try and make everything a game, right? And kind of gamify it in my head to kind of reframe it. Or I remind myself that I asked for this.
Right. And anytime, you know, anytime I have successful stress, I always literally just go back in my mind and close my eyes when I was 28 and all this stuff was crashing down and all kinds of problems, and calling my parents for money and just feeling bad and thinking, like, what would I have told myself at 28? It's like, hey, you're in your 40s now and you're doing 150 million. Like, I remind myself, perspective is a lot. It's part of the game. I've never met anyone that's at the top, on their way to the top, that hasn't gone through similar pains. And so you absorb it, you get better, and I think it shapes you.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's some good stuff. Let me pivot for a second to back to the pursuing of realtors. I wrote down attract versus chase, because what you mapped out there, and I think that's right, is you need to evaluate, like, what are the activities that a loan officer should be doing? You're right. It does depend on where they are in their career trajectory. Mm-hmm. And there's the chase activities, which is things you and I have both done. Broker previews, open houses, cold calling, cocktail, you know, across the board, you name it. Those then, hopefully, you kind of maybe shift or adjust out of those into more attraction type strategies where you're not chasing so much. And what I've witnessed of you, following you on your channels and social and all that kind of stuff for however long it's been, over a year at least, is it seems to me you're doing a lot of attraction type activities. Am I correct?
Yeah. You know, I appreciate that. I mean, in the beginning of your career, whether it's clients or partners, it's all about acquisition. As you get to the back half of their career, it's about retention. And so you have to do things to retain and keep the high quality people, clients, and partners that you get. The social media marketing standpoint for me personally, where it came into play for me is the mortgage industry, even to this day, it's flat, meaning it's behind. It's run by neon balloons and copy paper and stuff here and there. I'm like, you know, there has to be a better way. And so probably in 2018-ish, I was watching a documentary on HBO called 24/7, where they followed like Floyd Mayweather and Oscar De La Hoya and those people behind the scenes. And I thought, you know, they always make like Wall Street look cool. Like people that are stock brokers, like they do it behind the scenes. It looks cool. Like there's really cool stuff in the mortgage business. People just don't see it. They think of a loan officer. It's like somebody's dad with a tie at a bank and a cherry desk in the corner. I'm like, it's really not that. I was like, so how can I change the status quo? And how could I get a camera on me or behind the scenes at some point and kind of like change the direction that I want to go with my brand so I can show people it's better, but also like mortgages are so regulated and so generic and so like kind of nerdy that nobody wants to hear LTV, loan to value. And so if I could find a way to articulate mortgage stuff into a way that people could take it, would listen to it, but they feel like it was valuable and a nugget and they could understand it. That was always my goal, was to get a camera on the behavior and get the language shifted to where clients felt that it was valuable, not like bank sticky. And so I, you know, watching all those documentaries, I just had the idea, was like, I'm going to try it. I'm going to do it. I found Gary Vee. And so did my first one, like everyone else, terrible. My first video. So like deciding to put video out, right? It was a little series called A Day in the Life. It came to my house and shot with a dog. And then you just start, right? And like everybody else, you mess up and you screw up on camera and you're nervous. And, you know, I just continue to do it over and over and over. And that plus implementing technology in my business early on, 19-ish, 20, it got me ahead of the race. It's helped me because video, what it really does, people think it costs you time. It does not. It makes you time. And then, of course, it's compounded into what it is now. But that's a 5 or 6 year run with a lot of help and a lot of trial and error. And then obviously a lot of working things out. It really helped a lot during COVID. I realized, man, the digital space is like needed. If you were in COVID and didn't have a website, didn't have social profiles, didn't have technology, you were stuck. And so it reaffirmed to me what I already knew, which was like, do both. Have old school phone calls and handshakes, plus have an IG page, plus a YouTube channel, combine it all together. That's how you be a superpower in your brand. And it's also like, everybody wants to know who this person is. So if you say, hey, you know, I'm going to send you to Jeff. He's the best LO in town. He's my person. Trust me. Or say, hey, I'm going to send you to Jeff. He's the best LO in town. Trust me. But here's a link to his social. Check it out. That is your SportsCenter highlight of you as a cool quarterback. And if somebody can click on it and say, look at this person's value, delivery, they're professional, I feel like I get to know them. It's a soft introduction and a highlight reel for the person where otherwise the consumer or the partner couldn't see it and be able to measure it up front.
That's a good way to articulate that, the highlight reel. You're right, because people are making judgments, like it or not. We are being judged by what they find online, or should I say assessed or compared to, if that's a better use of words. You know, and then it's like people are going to look you up. You've heard this said, but people look you up online. The question is, what do they find?
That's correct. And our industry does not have a lot of high level professional, sharp people that are giving value all the time and articulating it to clients and partners in a way that they can understand it. It benefits them, that they know this is the right move and connects with them and builds trust. It is like phone call, my application, blah, blah, blah. And because loan officers are just busy all the time and it's tough and the world doesn't know that, there's this divide. So I try to make that connection. And it takes time. But the truth of the matter is, once you get it going, it compounds your time. It creates brand. I started the YouTube channel because some friends of mine, your agents, have an awesome channel called Living in Dallas. And they were like, dude, you have to do one, because we all know, like, we say the same thing all the time. And there's 10 or 15 minute conversations about rates and market and doctor programs and closing costs and refinancing and all these things. So I just started a channel and started to do all these topics forever. And I'll send them out to realtors and send them out to pre-approved buyers. And it's just helped so many people. It's like how to change a spare tire in 5 minutes. You just watch YouTube over and over, like, I got it. So it's like, well, why can't I do the same thing for clients and business partners on these little secrets and things on the market to like compound my message, but also like give people an inside look on this is how you should do it versus like a national headline that's like not accurate.
Is there a primary social channel you are focused on?
For me personally, I like Instagram for the social channels, but I like my YouTube channel the best because it's educational. It's long form. It just gives a very deep dive and kind of shows like the specifics on how things work. I'm on them all. I think everybody can be on them all, whatever you want, but I like IG for my main one, but I like YouTube the most when it comes to clients and when it comes to partners, because it just gives them so much long info that they can like really go deep quickly and watch it 100 times if they need to.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm quite honestly and transparently late to the YouTube channel. It's not that I haven't been on it. It's just, it hasn't been a focus. And so it's one of those things where like, you know, you're throwing content up, throwing shorts up, because that's the easy thing to do. But I know I'm hugely missing out on an opportunity. So this year is my year to kind of double down on YouTube.
It's super helpful. It's just, and it also helps teammates. Like if a realtor calls like, hey, I got a question about a 3-2-1 bot buy down. And, you know, our people can't talk on the phone or whatever. Like, hey, check out this 15-minute video from Brian in the meantime, and then watch it, share it with your clients until we get on a phone call. So it also like connects the dot on the need when I'm not available or somebody else is not comfortable talking about it, and they can share it with the clients. And so it's like a cloned version of my brain online just to help people get through it. But it also builds connection, because if they're talking to two LOs and one's just on the phone or application, the other one's doing Zoom and watching YouTube and all that, people kind of help to say like, I feel this person. I like this person. I know what they're doing. That's who I want to do business with.
Right. Exactly. I noticed on your YouTube channel, you have a link to a SurveyMonkey, which is a questionnaire about thinking of buying. Do you have any data points on like, I apologize if I'm putting you on the spot, but I'm just curious what kind of buy-in you get on that.
I mean, we probably get 10 or 15 a week. We're just trying to inquire to figure out why are people not buying. I find that most people either have bad information or lack of. And that is what I'm really trying to do, is get the information from the people that have it and know it to the people that need it. Hmm. It's crucial. Like I was on a Zoom call last night with some people who are agents with like 50 people on there. And like, people think you got to put 20% down. They can't get out of their lease. They're waiting until rates drop to buy houses and they don't know it's going to be more expensive. Like all these things that are second nature to us, society does not know them. So these surveys are to inquire to say like, why aren't you buying? What's keeping you from buying? Stuck in a lease, get out. Don't have any money for down payment assistance, closing. I mean, there's a million things. And so I try to have all this stuff out there just to see like, renting long-term is not a good way to create wealth. So let's find out the why and then help them overcome it and put together a plan. Hmm.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Data reminds me of the saying that most people have enough information to have an opinion, but not enough information to know that they're wrong.
And they may not even be wrong. They just may not know. So it's more of like, I tell everybody, hey, in theory, right? Figure out what it would take for you to buy a house. I'm stuck in my lease. My reletting fee's $5,000. I need $10,000 for down payment, blah, blah, blah. Put it together and go, okay, great. Is that reality? Can myself and your agent make it? Most of the time, halfway, always, sometimes all of it. But you at least want to get it on the table, especially how expensive rent is. It's like in Dallas specifically, like things are going nowhere but up. Texas is so popular. The amount of people that are moving here, it's like there's so many more humans than houses. Everything's expensive. Do you want to pay your own mortgage? Do you want to pay somebody else's?
Yeah. How would you describe, or what has been the impact for you on the attraction side of things since, you know, quote, going all in on your content strategy? What have you seen happen in terms of uplift, or, you know, whatever you can articulate?
Yeah, I just think it's all been positive. I think people just have a desire and a need for quick responses at their fingertips, and they want it to be accurate, and they want to be able to touch it and do it kind of on their timeline and relate. And so everything that I do is all like trying to do that. Like, and it's never an ask. It's always a value or a nugget. Like anybody that gets done watching a video, I want them to be smarter, take away something they didn't have, pique their interest on X, Y, Z, something like that. Again, so for me, the feedback has been great. It does attract a lot of people organically, both clients and partners, which is great. But for me, it's an educational platform for me to be the digital mayor of my town when it comes to home loans, so I can get to people quicker and compound my message wider without me having to do it all.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm looking at your link tree here, and we're going to put links to all this in the show notes, but I noticed what popped out for me was the Dallas Mortgage News. What can you tell me about that? Is that a newsletter or what is that?
Great question, man. So, you know, all my stuff online is Dallas Mortgage Man, but my website's dallasmortgagenews.com. So how I got that was back in 2012, I actually hired a publicist by the name of Michelle Lamont. Shout out to Michelle. And at the time, before brands were a thing and I didn't know anything about brands, and she got me on TV, she was like, you know, the newspaper here in Dallas is called Dallas Morning News. So she said, hey, you should be Dallas Mortgage News and you should be the Dallas Mortgage Man of Dallas Mortgage News. So a while back, you know, we got a couple of handles and it stuck here and there. And then when I decided I want to do video and get everything all aligned and get it all squared away, no one had that. I'm like, I already have that. And so I kind of, you know, got all the handles and got the domains and got it all squared away and done. And that's what it's been ever since. But it ties in really well with the, you know, who's the man or the woman in town? Oh, here's a mortgage man, mortgage woman, mortgage news. And so they're all one and the same. So Dallas Mortgage News is obviously the home site and I'm Dallas Mortgage Man of it. But that all comes from my old publicist, Michelle. I wouldn't have that if it wasn't for her.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Okay. So keeping online with this attraction strategy thing, I noticed you also, I see one event you're hosting right now with Rick Ruby, but I know you've done events for the last several years. Is that part of your attraction strategy too, hosting events?
It is. I like to do one big event a year. I like to get people in a room and just say, like, the best thing that I can do is try to provide value and put people on stage that can help people make more money and smarter and grow. And it's fun. And so, you know, again, it's like breaking the status quo of an LO. Like, what can I do outside of the mortgage? Whether it be courses, whether it be podcasts, whether it be being on stage, whether it's helping people overcome objections, whatever it is. And so this growth model that I'm doing is changing the dynamic of what a mortgage partner looks like and what they can do for consumers, what they can do for partners. And so I just continue to build every year. And I started that just, you know, 2 years ago with Sirhan and last year to Gary Vee. We're working on one at the end of the year this year. So again, it's just to broaden our brand, but obviously give more value to as many people as we can through different channels, which includes events.
I like what you just said right there. And I think that's a double clicking point. You said something to the effect of changing, essentially what my brain heard was you're changing the perception or the identity or brand of what a loan officer is, right? You said something to that effect.
Yeah, I just changing the status quo and the mindset of what a mortgage partner actually is versus what people perceive them to be now, which is like a parasitic, one-sided partnership where they're just begging for leads. They only give this person this for a loan. You know, there's no reciprocity. And I don't like that. I don't like how our industry is one-sided. Like, give us leads. Got any leads? It's like, oh, it's one way. So it needs to be two-way and you need to make sure and be valuable. And so that's why, again, from a leadership standpoint and the way society is going, it's like the loans are one thing. I get it. That's home base. We got to do well here and get it all done. But there are so many other layers to it. And I've just been helped by so many people over a long period of time to build the layers out. Now we're just building thicker and stronger and more every year and teaching other people how to do it.
Yeah, I have this thing that I take people through. It's this pyramid of realtor prospecting. And at the bottom is solicitor. The next level is vendor. And then the next level is partner. And then the next level is mentor. What you just kind of articulated there is, you know, the reciprocation has usually been one-sided, the loan officer receiving and not giving much back. And the holy grail is let's provide leads to the realtors. And that would be all great and well. If and when we can do that, fantastic. It's easier said than done. Mm-hmm. However, one easier way for you to become more of a mentor or a partner, you just said, which is, you know, how do you give back, right? Events, courses, training, education. You think about the problems that realtors have, and then you become the solution to help them overcome some of those problems.
Yeah. And there's a million problems that agents have, and there's a million problems that lenders have. But to your point, those five things are 5 of 100. I mean, if you tell an agent, hey, I'm going to close smooth and on time, and my goal is to get one client from every client, and everyone that closes, you say, hey, this is an amazing transaction. Thank you so much. Scale of 1 to 10. It means the world. Do you know anybody, friends or family, that are renting that I should have a conversation with? And that's how, I mean, if you just ask and get a referral from every person to the agent, like, that's enough in itself, probably. But there's 50 other things that you mentioned. And so as you know these things and you grow and you figure out how to become more valuable, it's not, you don't get commoditized. It's not just cheapest rate. Here's some paperwork and do what I say. It starts that way, but it sure as heck doesn't have to end that way. And we are trying to change that too. So, you know, people find us and see us more valuable and understand that we are successful business partners together, and neither side could be as good as they are without the other.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which is probably a good transition into what's been happening over the last week, which is the NAR settlement. So I'm curious how you're responding, or how are you going to show up? What are you doing in this, in response to this whole NAR thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's early. So I think all of us are kind of patiently waiting in the dark and having our conversations with other colleagues and people on what we think is going to happen and what the options are out there, but nothing set in stone. I mean, this is a big deal. Even though people say, oh, it's not a big deal, it is. It's big in the mindset shift. It's big in the structure. It's big on the psychology of it. You know, the closest, biggest thing to this, I think, probably is Dodd-Frank, the feeling of it and the ripple effect. So we're putting together a few things over the next month or so, but we need some guidance. We're waiting on the agencies. We want to hear a little bit more on legal to put it together so we don't jump the shark. But as always, we will stay ahead of it, be a valuable partner. The minute we get valuable, good information, we will put it into a process and a strategy and give it to all our partners and our clients, and we will make sure that they fully understand it and they maximize it as much as they can.
That's a very safe answer for the time being.
Because it's too early. It's too early. I can project and say, I think they're going to let us roll into the loan. I think they're going to give a credit and then the credit gets passed on. I think, you know, we're not really sure. And there's so many pieces. So it's like the loan person says, okay, then the realtor has to, and the title has to, and the law has to, and the state. And so because it's so early, you've got to align these stars. They're going to get aligned. Just a matter of how fast and what's the friction. But we're still waiting on more information because there's so many brains that have to say yes and align that we don't want to get ahead of it, but we will get there quickly as we all get more information. But it's a little too soon to say this is what to do versus I think it's going to be a version of that.
Well, I get what you're saying on a psychology standpoint. It is a quote unquote big thing. I think for those of us like yourself who've been through Dodd-Frank and the TRID and all that stuff, that was crazy and chaotic, and there was similar emotions flowing around. But you know, we got through those as well. However, when I look at the actual mechanics of what's really changed, I mean, that's kind of where I'm hanging out right now at the moment. Is it's to me, I try and simplify everything and break it down to the simplest form. And so one of the key things is, like, as I'm sure you know, like, you can't put the cooperative compensation in the MLS anymore. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are confusing the hell out of that, making it say like the seller can't pay the buyer's agent commission and things like that. And that can't be, that's not true at all. And you know, I've been digging deeper into this whole 180 page document, whatever it is. So, cause I want to have a intelligent response as well. That's based on fact. And we know this isn't settled yet, but a lot of people are thinking it's going to go down pretty much as is. But I'm talking to brokers, real estate brokers across the country, where they're taking contracts this week that the seller's agent is paying the BAC, like, and it's working fine. Not any huge disruption. That's not going to be the case for everybody. But the smart agents, the professional agents, will adapt and pivot. And yes, we need to get better at our skill set, presentation value proposition, like all those things, right? And so that, sure. I see this as a good, just like it was with Dodd-Frank and all that kind of stuff, a good leveling up of professionalism in the industry.
It is. And I mean, it's okay. It's just, you know, there are adjustments. And so
Most of them are psychological and emotional. That we need.
Yeah, the real estate side hasn't had an adjustment in a long time. Lenders get it a lot, TRID and Dodd-Frank and all that. And so because our side's a little bit more regulated, we're used to getting like yanked every now and then. But this is a big statement for all. And so it will change some stuff. I agree. I don't think it'll change as much as people think. They'll find ways to navigate it and negotiate and get it all done. But at the end of the day, like, this industry cannot survive without all-stars. They're going to find a way to make it work for everybody. It's just, you know, how quickly can everybody get it on the table and agree? But it's okay. Tough times don't last. Tough people do.
Right. Okay. So maybe a different question then. How or what types of conversations, like, a lot of people are seeing this as, you know, an opportunity to better align, to better partner with real estate agents. Perhaps there's some, and the way I see it is this is like, you know, how we used to talk about the loan officers, an extension of the realtor's team for client experience, et cetera. Do you think this amplifies that even more?
I think it amplifies it in conjunction with financial literacy. That is what I've been preaching for a long time, which is, hey, people have to know paperwork and numbers and literacy and highest and best use of the money and negotiate contracts and what can and can't be done. And so the problem is, during a COVID boom when everything is 3%, the rates sell themselves. You don't have to be that intelligent. It's just how many fish can jump in the boat. Now it's changed. People don't know about buy downs and strategies and closing costs and highest and best use, blah, blah, blah. You combine all that because people care about affordability. They care about stability and they care about competition. Those are the three things right now that people care about the most. You throw this new NAR change in there and it's like, who can actually help me navigate this quickly, correctly? And I think you capture market share and come out the backside even stronger as long as you and your partners know it all, get it all, and huddle up together.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. So stay tuned. We'll circle back with you on that to check in to see what else is running 30 days from now. Although it's interesting, the settlement, I mean, July, like they're expecting all this stuff to be in place by July. That's pretty fast.
That's fast. We will see. It'll be business as usual for a while. So we'll have to walk and chew gum at the same time, which is normal stuff, plus prepare for the future stuff and get the message out and move all the pieces around. But, you know, it is what it is. You do it or you don't.
Right. Okay. Let's pivot to the last thing I wrote down for our conversation here today. You and I talked about this before we hit record. I have it pulled up on my phone. Oops. Where did it go? The Fed meeting today. Are you surprised by what they did or their positioning statements?
No, not necessarily. I never thought rates were going to come down as fast as we had hoped. Inflation's tough. You know, they follow inflation. It's tough to get it down, but it's also tough to get it down when there's a lot of money being printed and a lot of things that are just adding to it. So, you know, do I want rates to come down for consumers and the business? Yeah, but deep down, the right thing to do is probably still hold the line a tad. Because if they cut it too quick, I think it'll double back to where it was. And I think it needs to cool a little bit longer. I think it's a smart play. Hey, look, if they got to get ahead of it, they can always cut deeper. But I think it's probably the right move. I do think there's going to be some cuts back half of the year heading to the election. But I think it's seeing a little bit more time to make sure it is the right time to reverse the engines. Because we all remember, I think it was like right after Christmas or right around there, whatever, rates dropped in the sixes. And I'm telling you, it was just like a mob came off the sideline for like 3 weeks and we were locking people in the low sixes or whatever. And so it makes you think like, this is what's going to happen when it goes for good. And then what happens is it pushes prices up, everything else. And so that contributes to inflation. So I don't think it's cooled off quite enough. It will happen. It's just going to be delayed.
Who are you seeing then are the active buyers in the market, or, you know, I would call them the truly motivated, but who are you seeing?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I tell everybody, you know, real estate is local. What happens in my backyard and yours, like, they're not the same. It's like saying, what's the national average of gas? Like in La Jolla and Dallas, it's not the same as New Jersey. So don't worry about if it's ice cold in, you know, Kansas and it's hot in Dallas, like they're not the same. Dallas and Texas is hot just because of the growth, right? So it's the people, the population, the politics, the sports, the people. I mean, everything here keeps it going. So it's all the growth specifically from the state. But the people that are buying are the ones that have money. They're in a pretty good position. They understand that, hey, you know, buying now may be a little bit better than buying when rates are lower, because obviously it's going to push the price of the house up and they may not be able to get their hands on a house. And so getting a house that they want at a price that they want might be a nice buy. They can always refinance later at some point, whether the rates get better in 6 months or 18 months. But it puts them in a position of where people are kind of like tired of wasting money. The market didn't crash like they thought. And they understand that, you know, it's still a good time to get a house. You may overpay a tad on the interest rate and the payment, but what you're going to make up in the long run after the rates drop and things go boom on demand, you can refinance. You'll probably make more on the ROI on the appreciation than you lose on the payment.
Knowing you're all about financial literacy, it makes me curious which tools that we've all got out there, Mortgage Coach, MBS Highway, for more intelligent buyer conversations. Are you using either of those?
Both.
Okay. And you feel that's really critical to be able to get people through the logic side of things?
Yeah. And I just think it's easy. I mean, you know, human beings are kind of paint by numbers, elementary eyeballs. And so it's easy to just like put it there side by side and say, hey, you know, instead of putting $20,000 down on the house, why don't you pay off $20,000 on the car? Because this payment's that here and there. And so what it does, it puts it in a visual and articulates it in a way that your everyday person can carve through it, keep it, make sure they're doing the right thing, and you guys are kind of using this as a cheat sheet, because there are a lot of moving pieces, and it's hard to know all that and do all that unless you make it sticky. And I think the visuals and the alerts and the technology helps that.
Yeah. Interesting. Makes me think of our conversation earlier in terms of percentage of business and purchase versus refi. I should have asked this earlier, but I'm curious. I was interviewing somebody, and they were talking about a company they were working with, and that they said they're having a banner year, production wise. And that, I forget the percentages, but the predominant percentage of their business was actually refi, but it was debt consolidation, restructuring, refi.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of that out there. I also think, like, people that are still in the business that are self-gen people, they're going to do well. A lot of people have fallen off. They've gotten out of the industry. The mortgage business is tough. A lot of people just don't want to take that call and work that deal or work that house to get it all done. So there's less people left that are qualified and know what they're doing. So they're getting the market share and they're expanding, whether they're doing debt consolidation, whether they're doing bank statement loans, whether now they're working with a divorce attorney. I mean, there's less players on the field. So the players that are still left are getting a lot of balls tossed their way. We're feeling that. I mean, in March alone, the most I've ever done at the peak of our career during COVID at the peak was 22 million. And that was almost all refi at 3. And this month we're just under 20. And that comes from diversity on book of business, but also less people out there to take the phone calls and get it all done. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing for the industry to kind of flush itself out for a minute. We will see all the people that are left to probably help the consumer and the partner at a higher level. You just got to kind of knock a little bit of the low level down.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said at the beginning, you've got to make a decision to commit to this business. Who are you going to be? What's your identity as a mortgage advisor, professional? And you got to be something more than just a loan officer.
Yeah. Which business model do you want? Do you want to be transaction based or relationship based? Figure out what path. One is lowermybills.com, internet leads, whatever. You know, the other one is people. One of these is harder to do than the other one, but it's a much longer, better cycle. One of them is easier, but it's short term. And so this is where you have to find your people, find your path. So that way, you know which direction you want to go.
That's the same thing I did. I had to make that decision many years ago, 2003, where I was working in a subprime shop. And I don't know if you remember Mortgage Originator Magazine.
Of course.
Yeah. So I used to read that, and all the people, Tom Bass and like all these people were in there. Right. And I remember bringing that to my friend who got me the job at that subprime shop. And I'm like, dude, look at these people. They're making like $50 million a year. And he's like, no, those are branches. Those aren't individuals. I'm like,
right.
I don't think so. And they're all relationship based, not leads online, right? All that stuff.
That's correct.
And they had longevity too, because as you said a moment ago, yes, one's harder, but you get to a point where hopefully that's becomes a little bit, it's like the oil well concept, right? Once mm-hmm. you tap that oil well, it continues to produce oil over time.
I agree.
All right, man, before we wrap up, any last projects or things coming up on your radar you are excited about that you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, you know, obviously just the journey of 24, helping a lot of people get out of the rent race. I mean, obviously our team's here to have conversations and planning sessions all the time, working on an event in April 5th with Rick. It's about referrals for realtors and lenders, just how to generate warm leads and kind of boost things up when the market's down. And then put together a big event back half of the year in October. So I will announce that here in the next month or two, and encourage everybody to follow for that.
Yeah, congrats on getting Rick there. That's a feather in your cap, I assume. But when I see that, that tells me that you're probably or have been a member of the Core for some time.
I am. I love the Core. I couldn't be where I'm at without him. And I'm glad to be on stage with him opening, and what nice. He does is special. He is he belongs on the Mount Rushmore of all time. So thankful to be a part of it, and thankful we'll be putting on the event with the Core.
Fantastic. All right, man. Well, listen, I appreciate your time, because I know your time is extremely valuable. We're going to link up everything you have in the show notes for people who can follow you, which I'm sure some people will reach out. You'll get a bunch of new followers, which is cool. Brian, man, thank you so much.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Listeners, you know what to do. If you like this episode, leave us a review, share it with somebody you care about. See you on the next one. Bye for now. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Hey, got a question for you. Are you struggling to get engagement and referrals from real estate agents and feeling like you're constantly fighting for business in a crowded market? What if I told you there's a way to attract agents to provide unique value that helps them grow their business and generate referrals on demand, helping you become the dominant loan officer in your local market? Look, I was an originator for over 10 years. I understand the frustration of feeling like you're just another player in a sea of competitors, and you're struggling to stand out and get noticed by the agents that you want to attract and engage with. What if I told you there's a way to flip the script and position yourself as the go-to lender in your market, attracting agents, not chasing, not paying for leads, not cold calling, but actually generating referrals on demand? And the best part, you don't have to ever make a cold call or chase leads again. You don't have to work with weenie head agents if you don't want to. This is what we help originators do at the My Agent Classes membership. What do you get? You get exclusive access to our private community of like-minded loan officers where you can network, share best practices, get ongoing support to grow your business, and you get a turnkey platform that helps you build your personal brand that moves you from solicitor and vendor to partner and peer. You attract agents, you increase conversations, and you increase your referrals, all without chasing, without begging, playing the game, or paying for leads. You just by doing what you love to do, which is help other people solve problems. So how do you learn more? Go to mortgagemarketing.pro, book a call with me, and I'll take you through the library of done-for-you agent classes that you can use to just plug and play and follow our proven system of train the trainer. You don't have to be the subject matter expert. Think of yourself like the nightly news reporters just sharing the news. You also get access to our marketing automation platform that will attract, engage, and convert agents to referral partners for you. Scripts, checklists, downloads, automated email, SMS, text messages, done-for-you landing pages, and more. You also get our market maker content, which is the social media images to help you promote your class online. And again, every Friday, our Mortgage Marketing Mastermind call. You get access to top LOs, speakers, coaches, connect and collaborate with what's working right now in today's market to help you grow your business so you don't have to struggle and try and figure it out all on your own. Don't miss the opportunity to learn more about what's helping so many originators succeed in becoming the go-to lender in your local market. Book a call with me now, mortgagemarketing.pro. We'll see you on the other side.